Everyone, welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week, show after show, breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen, especially those of us building our businesses from home, that we're just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And I'm looking forward to bringing today's guest in because we've been trying to record this since last year. So it is about time that I finally get this lovely woman on our show. Dana S. Diaz studied journalism and psychology at DePaul University. While there's no better teacher than life experience, and Dana has had a long life experiences with narcissistic abuse, her education did give her the ability to accurately verbalize and express how narcissistic abuse creates confusion and conflict within victims. Today, Dana is a proud voice for fellow victims who are unable, afraid, or ashamed to share their experiences. She strives to create awareness and understanding to ensure victims are given the support they need to first understand their situation and then begin the healing process. Her first book, Gasping, chronicling her own abusive marriage that lasted nearly three decades, started as a journal that she hid under the couch cushion in the basement. It's a very real book, very disturbing, but obviously with a wonderful ending. That is just continuing on because the journey continues. So with all that being said, Dana, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Thank you so much for having me and for helping me share this information because it's not nice, but it needs to be talked about.
It really isn't. And the reality is so many people, that narcissistic abuse is something that is such a stranglehold because it's not always physical. In your case, it was physical and mental, but very often it is that mental abuse where somebody is constantly making you feel like you are less than worthy, that you deserve what they're doing to you, that it's your fault. All of these things are happening to you. And so I would love for you to candidly take us on your journey that led you to finally have the strength to write this book.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a long journey that, you know, I would encourage anybody who is interested to grab up the book. I've heard it's a pretty quick read. It's a page turner, they say. But that's the thing about the narcissistic abuse is, you know, not to minimize other abuses, but when you're in a situation with a narcissist, they will enact any form, any tactic they can to abuse you. And it's not just even physical or mental. They use financial abuse, sexual abuse, legal abuse. They will drain you so that you're trying to deal with one thing and process it while another thing is coming at you. You know, so you constantly have chaos that you're dealing with. And that's what makes it so confusing. Your head is spinning. You can't focus. You can't think straight. You're trying to just calm the situation. And then when kids get involved, then you're trying to keep things as peaceful as possible for them. So it's overwhelming. But what happened for me, it's interesting because coming out of a childhood where I was physically and verbally abused by a very narcissistic stepfather, I knew, I didn't have a name for it. I didn't know what narcissism was, but I knew what it was when I, you know, when I saw it, when I came across a human being who exhibited the same qualities. So the second I met my ex-husband, about whom the relationship is chronicled in the book, the second I met him, I mean, all the alarms were going off. He was a different type of narcissist than my stepfather. My stepfather was one of these he bragged all the time, very overt, telling everybody else how great he was and that he had everything and he knew everything. You know, he was going to make sure everybody was aware. Whereas my ex, when I met him, he came off much quieter, much more unsuspecting, but there was this underlying sense that of arrogance and like he was entitled to the servitude that I was like, nope, not me. I'm not that girl, not doing it. Been there before, just got out of it. But unfortunately, when you have come out of a childhood where your mother and your father have both basically rejected you, I also was told that nobody would ever love me, that I should have never even been born. I never was wanted. I was never this, never that. I would never be enough for anybody. And there was nothing, I could win the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, I could become a doctor. None of it would ever be good enough. Everything was diminished. I just was never meant to be anything more than what they thought of me, which was nothing. So unfortunately, even though I fought against it, even though I was a tenacious little thing, and even though I stood up for myself, which would just be met with the physical abuse, I still internalized so much of that. So looking back, I didn't know what a codependent was. I didn't know what a people pleaser was, but that essentially is what I was. I was basically, you know, the puppy who would jump through any hoop if it meant somebody giving me some attention or affection or approval in any way, shape, or form. It didn't even matter who it came from. I just needed for somebody to see some worthiness in me and to see that I deserved some sense of approval. And so this man, as repulsive as he was to me, and as much as I didn't like him and knew, you know, I saw him for what he was right in the beginning, I fell for it when he returned in our second interaction together and expressed interest in me. It was the only interest anybody was showing in me. And I was just so love starved. I mean, let's just say it, I was desperate. And I just thought, okay, well, maybe it's me, you know, and that's the thing about narcissism too. You do think it's your fault. And so in my childhood, I was the ultimate scapegoat child. I didn't even have to be somewhere or do anything for something to be my fault. So here I am with this young man thinking, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm being judgmental. Maybe I'm misconstruing, you know, his personality. Maybe it's me. So I'll give him a chance. And what happened was, I entered, you know, into the situation with him, and right from the get-go, things went badly. I mean, the first night I hung out with him, he was disrespectful, spewed beer on me, which is just disgusting, and you don't normally do that the first time that you're inviting somebody to be with you for, let's call it a date, even though it was watching a movie in his apartment. And then it ended with a sexual interaction that I didn't want to happen. It wasn't rape, though, but it was weird because in a strange way, I felt worthy of his sexual attention. Like, it made me feel worthy to have him want me sexually, but I didn't want to have sex with him. And it makes me sad thinking about it and even having written it and reread it to think that, you know, if I had a daughter, it would just break my heart to know that she was in that situation, to think that she would give her body to somebody that she didn't want to, but just because it was the closest thing that she felt to love. And that's exactly what it was. But unfortunately, that was the first night I was with him. 25 years later, after having a marriage and a child and a whole life of so many things that happened. It's like the thing that I try to tell people about narcissistic abuse that makes it hard to get out of is it's kind of like gaining weight, you know, like 5 years later, you've gained 5 pounds, let's say, and you're like, how did that happen? How do I not fit into my clothes, you know, anymore? It's because it trickles in little by little. It started in the beginning with that first date. And then 3 weeks later, he's whipping a CD at me across the room, which doesn't seem like a big deal. It just crosses a boundary just ever so slightly that it's, you know, it's not right, but it's not enough to be a deal breaker, to break the relationship. And then they get away with it. So then the next thing is, you know, punching a hole in the wall, slamming a door so hard it comes off the hinges. Okay, don't like it, feel unsettled, wish it wasn't happening. But again, not enough of a deal breaker. well, then there's some infidelity, but we're not married, you know, that there's excuses and oh, but I have to hang out with these people because they're with my work and whatever. And, you know, by the end of this 25 years, we had kept stepping over that boundary so many times that now we've got knives and guns and domestic violence and courts and restraining orders. And, you know, people don't understand how this happens because people that haven't been through a narcissistic relationship look at it and say, oh, well, if my, you know, boyfriend or husband or whoever ever was unfaithful, I'd be out of there. If my, you know, whoever did this or that or the other thing, you think that, but when you're in it and when you have the idea in your head that this is the only person that is ever going to love you, because who else is going to want to love you? This is what has been put into your head. And now they have made you feel that way too. You're not going to leave. Not to mention, you know, the life you've built together in any situation where, you know, take the narcissism out of it, take the abuse out of it. It's not as easy as people think to just up and walk away. I mean, there are things you have to think about. And certainly in our case, one of the biggest factors for me was his family, because his parents were lovely. I mean, they were just the nicest people and they treated me like a daughter. His father even presented me to people, introduced me as his daughter, not his daughter-in-law. We had a very close relationship and I loved him dearly. And my husband's sister, my sister-in-law, had become my best friend. We talked almost every day on the phone. So I wasn't willing, when I didn't have my own parents in my life as parents, I wasn't willing to give up the parents that I now had and the sister I now had and this whole family and this whole life. I kind of felt like being with him and dealing with the things I dealt with was a small price. Plus, there is the added aspect of people think that I went out in the street and just picked up Chucky running around with a butcher knife, and that's not at all the case. These people are often well-dressed, well-groomed. You know, they volunteer, they're at church, they're coaching Little League. They present as really great people. Everybody says how nice they are. And oh, you're so lucky to be married to somebody like that. And, you know, so they do have that part of them. That's what you were attracted to in the beginning. Although in my case, we didn't have a very good first interaction, but regardless, we did have good times. There were times that we enjoyed each other's company and that we laughed at and where everything was fine, but there was always that impending doom, you know, that if you looked at him the wrong way, or God forbid you didn't do something he liked, or you broke some unspoken rule that he just suddenly made up because it convenienced him in the moment, all hell would break loose. And that's when the bad stuff would happen.
You know, my mom heart, I'm serious. For me, I mean, it's word of mom for a reason. My whole life, I was born to be a mom, and I just can't even imagine I have a daughter. And I pity a guy who would ever say something to my daughter. Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? She wanted a kickboxing machine for her 18th birthday. My daughter's like 6 feet tall. She looks like a runway model, so she's very tall and slender. I wish I looked like her. She snapped the bar in half.
Doing oh my
around
gosh.
Half kid. Yeah. I mean, she's a brute.
That's amazing.
She's an absolute brute. For somebody, you look at her and people say to her, oh, you're so skinny. It's like, she's like, I'm not skinny. I'm slender. But she's solid muscle.
Oh.
I really do. And you know what? Raising a girl is not easy. To teach them the rules without breaking the spirit. But when you, having lived with a narcissistic father, that verbal abuse, my life would have been so much easier if my dad had just hit me. Because those words hit harder than a fist. And they
Absolutely.
Come back over and over and over and make you doubt yourself. What did I do wrong? What did I not do right? No. And it's amazing how women will take the blame for the horrible way they're being treated. And I applaud you regardless of how long, because believe me, the second half of this, I want to talk about that part
mm-hmm.
of your life and how you finally found it within yourself. Because as parents, those of you listening out there who are raising children, it's our responsibility to teach our sons to treat the people that they are with love and respect and personhood. you know, respecting them as the person that they are. Forget what sex they are. Whether it's your daughter, your son, doesn't matter. The person that they are with. And it is our job when we're raising daughters, again, to teach them the rules without breaking that spirit, because it doesn't matter that it's 2024. Women still have to work twice as hard to be considered half as good.
Let me say this, though, just to tag along with that before we go forward in the story. Going back, and I did share with you, and for anyone listening, if you had a childhood that resonates in some way, I am at the tail end of revising my book about my childhood. It should hopefully be out by the end of this summer. But one of the crux of my life has been, you know, despite the abuse from my stepfather, it's really my mother and the relationship or the lack thereof that I had with her. Because you are 100% right. I agree with you. It is the parent's job, whether you're a mother or a father, to raise your children in certain ways, you know, to uplift them, but not exalt them, to make them strong, but be weak when necessary for the context. I mean, there's so many, you know, paradoxes in life that you have to teach your child. But I point out, because I know this from my experience, you cannot force somebody to be somebody they don't want to be. And my mother didn't want to be my mother, and my stepfather didn't want to be my father. My life began, unfortunately, being born to a teenager. My mother was a teenager when she got pregnant with me. Obviously, so was my biological father, but she did not want me. She has not been shy about telling me she wishes she could have aborted me or adopted me out. She didn't, because my grandma and great-grandma stepped in and said, we don't have any other grandchildren or great-grandchildren. This is the first, and no child in this family is going to be raised by strangers. So my grandma said she would go get a job, pay for my expenses, and great-grandma was already home anyway, so she said she would take me in and take care of me, thereby releasing my mother of her responsibility to me. My mother immediately after I came out of her womb, had her tubes tied, because apparently back in the 70s, they didn't care about tying the tubes of a 17-year-old girl. But clearly she did not want children, never mind me. So this is a woman that I ended up with only because after the few very loving years that I shared with my great grandma, you know, my mother got with this older man, this narcissist, who's promising her the house and the car and the life that she thought she'd never have. She could only have it with him, apparently, according to her at least. That everybody thought, well, if you're going to go have all these nice things and live this nice life, well, then you should take your daughter with you. And I don't know who had the great idea, but I wish they would have just left stuff alone, because I would have rather stayed in the city of Chicago, in the crappy neighborhood we lived in the poor apartment with my great grandma, where we ate bowls of white rice every day because it was cheap, because at least that woman loved me. And in my heart, she was my mother, because I didn't really have a relationship with my mother to know that she was really the one. You know, from every cartoon I watched and everything I was seeing in my life, my great grandma was the one who soothed me when I woke up from a nightmare at night. She was the one who kissed my boo-boos. She was the one who gave me a bath and clothed me and fed me and everything else, not my mother. My mother remained that detached my entire life. So I don't know why she took me with her, but I just want to point out that even though her husband was the one inflicting the abuse on me, she was, I always say, she enabled, excused, and tolerated, because I was infringing on her life and her relationship with this man by bringing things up to her that I knew were wrong. When I would go to her and say, he said this or he did that, oh, well, you need to stop causing trouble. If you weren't so difficult, it was always turned around on me. If you wouldn't provoke him to be angry, you know, and sometimes she would outright tell me that the things I said didn't happen. Well, he says he never said that. He says he never did that. I would show her marks on my body. I mean, I would get excited when I had a witness, because that was just the big bonus of all. you know, no, talk to this person. This person heard it. This person saw it. But she would not accept it. And to this day, we have no contact. We haven't spoken in years. And it breaks my heart because I'm 48 years old. I still want my mommy. That little girl in me still wants my mommy. And the fact that it's like the universe played a joke on me, I was born on her birthday. So we have the same birthday. And this last birthday was the first one that, I mean, she actually gave my son my baby blanket, sent basically any memory of me was sent to me through my son because she just has erased me from her life altogether. And it's very sad because I don't understand being a mother myself, how something is created inside of you and how you give birth to this person and you don't have any feeling or any sense of duty at all. But I have to point that out because just because a woman has a baby does not make her a mother. Some women just don't want to mother the children they have. Now, here's an interesting tidbit. My stepfather, since I was born with the wrong DNA, he had always wanted his own child, his own biological child. Well, my mother had her tubes tied. She went through several years of procedures to have the reversal tubal ligation so that she could carry a child. After 16 miscarriages, they finally did have their own child together. I have a brother, and he is 14 years younger than me. But before he was born, when my mother was pregnant with him, I was told by my stepfather that when that baby was born, the three of them would be a family and I would not be. That I didn't have a mother, I didn't have a father, and that I would not be a sister to my brother. That I was just their obligation, and they made it very clear, was to feed, clothe, and shelter me until I was 18, and that was it. And you know what? At that point, I was like, fine, because I don't want to be here anyway. I'm done with it. And there were times where I did not even want to exist at all. I just didn't have the nerve to kill myself. So, you know, you just have to remember that there are just people who don't want to be a parent to one child, but they do to another. Because if my brother was standing here right now, he was raised completely opposite of how I was. If you asked him about our parents, he would tell you they were the best parents any kid could ever have. Yet these are the same two people who destroyed any possibility of me ever feeling any sense of accomplish or esteem or respect for myself. But the kicker is, and the beautiful thing is, it took me a while. It took me 45 years. But in the last few years, I have figured it out for myself. It took me enduring that 25-year marriage. And even after the divorce, he threatened my life and attempted to kill me. I mean, there's no way to avoid saying it. But it took that, and it took getting sick, becoming autoimmune, and developing a lung disease as a result of cortisol, the stress hormone constantly running through me for so many decades, that when I finally got sick and I had diminished to 93 pounds and I had a backpack oxygen machine I had to wear to just barely breathe and get through every day, that I finally was like, okay, this isn't it. This is not what life is supposed to be. I'm emotionally, mentally miserable. I feel like a worker ant. All I do is go to work, provide for this man who has decided he didn't have to work, but that I was supposed to provide the income and the life for him so that he could lay around and do nothing while I got sicker every single day and more miserable. And I just said to myself one night, what do I want? Because this is not it. I wasn't even living my life. I was living a life that was dictated to me, a life that had been determined for me. And that's not, I didn't want to just wake up one day and I died and that was it. And it was for nothing. Because in my heart, I'd gone to school. I'd never used my degree in journalism. I never was able to, you know, use the information I learned in psychology to help other victims of abuse. I hadn't traveled for so many years as I had hoped to travel the world. And there were just so many things I still wanted to do. And I was young enough to do them, but I couldn't do it sick and I couldn't do it with this man. So that's when I just decided I'm done. I'm done taking this man's crap. I'm done living a life that he wants for me because it's serving me nothing but making me sick inside and out. and I was done. And I'm so glad that I came back to that realization, because I had been wanting out of that marriage for about 15 years. And I could have just as easily stayed in it for another 15 and maybe even the rest of my life. Not because it was fun, not because I was happy. And hell, he wasn't happy either, let's face it. But just because I had all these things in my head, I had all these family members, including my mother, who I would go to, that were like, well, you married him, you made a vow, you made a commitment, tough crap. You know, nobody was telling me I deserved better. Nobody was, you know, indicating that I had any sense of deservedness for a better life or to even be happy. My mother wasn't happy. I still don't think she's happy. But I almost wonder sometimes if she just didn't want me to be happy because I wasn't allowed to have anything more than she had. And, you know, it's just disgusting to think that just so many of the people that should have been a heavier influence in my life and should have been reiterating more positivity into me were the ones who were actually diminishing me and diminishing my spirit. But man, those embers were still burning in there somewhere. I just had to find them and relight them. And once I did, that was it. My ex sensed that change in me. And the beauty of it is that I thought I would have such difficulty filing for divorce. And, you know, we would have a 10-year long, you know, divorce, you know, that would go on forever because he wouldn't allow it. But you know what? Once he saw that change in me and that he knew I was done, his ego couldn't stand the insult of his wife leaving him. So he packed up in the middle of the day while my son and I were at work and he moved out. I came home, kind of looked around and thought, oh my God, he's gone. And I was like, I should have been crying. I should have been upset. Anybody would be. And even with my feelings, I have very deep-seated feelings about rejection and abandonment, you know, considering my childhood. But I was like, thank you, Jesus. Thank you that he is gone, because this was the biggest blessing I could have ever had. And the best part of it was, once the divorce happened and we had some domestic violence, we got past that and everything, you know, just went on. Me and my son, he was a senior in high school, 17 years old. I remember shortly after all this settled down, he was like, you know, I don't remember seeing you smile and laugh so much. He's like, it's just, you can breathe easier around here and you can even feel that the tension is gone. And, you know, he was more easygoing too. So all those years that I had told myself that, oh no, I had to stay for him because I don't want to break up his family and I don't want him to fall into drugs and alcohol and all these things that children of the divorce fall into, and which of course my ex was using and holding over my head to imply that he would ensure that our son would take up some of these self-sabotaging habits and make sure that I knew it would be my fault, you know, that our son would, you know, not have the full life that he should have. My son never did. He doesn't smoke. He's never taken drugs. He doesn't even really drink. I've even tried at family weddings, like, you just want a sip? You want me to get you something? Nope, he won't do it. He has a great job. He bought his first house at 19 years old, all on his own, down payment and everything, all on his own. He works very hard. He works two jobs. He drives a very, very nice vehicle, and just, he's gotten with a girl that we just absolutely adore. And it's interesting that you talk about, you know, being a mother, and I agree, because I feel the same thing for my son, that if anyone hurt a hair on his head, I would go after them like a chihuahua. And I'm 5'3 and barely 100 pounds. I can't do much damage. I'm not all muscle like your daughter. But boy, you hurt a mama's child, you know, mama bear's never too happy. But this girl that he's brought into his life, we just adore her. And I look at her so often and think, she's exactly the same age I was when I met my ex. And I look at her all the time and think, oh my gosh, her mother doesn't have anything to do with her. And so now I've taken that role in her life, and I've even told her, no matter what happens with you and my son, you have me. I'm going to get teary-eyed now. I'm like, I'm never leaving you. You are never going to not have me in your life. I will always be there and I will always have your back, because that's my girl. And I'm so glad that my son brought her to me. And I think that things happen for a reason that way. But yeah, life is good. We're thriving. We're doing well. I'm obviously not 93 pounds anymore. You know, my face is fuller and I'm putting on a little weight, but I'm also remarried. And I would have never even thought about dating, but after everything I'd been through, but it's somebody whose family I've known for 20 years and I've known him for many of those years. So it was just kind of like once, I always say it's kind of like when you come out of a situation like that, you start pulling weeds because you lose all these people. I've lost my ex-husband's family. They don't want anything to do with me because, of course, he's created some narrative, you know, with them about I'm crazy and that I'm this and I'm that. And he claims I harassed him and abused him, that it was the other way around, you know, and I don't have my family. And, you know, so I look at all these weeds that have pulled, friends who've removed themselves, siding with this person or that. But once those weeds are gone, it's amazing when the sun is shining and the rain is falling and you're getting that nourishment that you need because there are people around you. They're that soil that was always there, but the weeds were sucking them out. You know, they were sucking life out of you and everyone else. But without all those weeds, boy, you can bloom. You can rise above. You can grow. You can learn. You can rise above everything. And it's not easy. It, you know, easier for some than others, but it's such a liberating and freeing process to rid yourself of people that aren't for you. Why would anyone? I look back like, why all these people who aren't in my life now, now that they're not, they've made room for all the people who are for me and people that I wouldn't have had relationships if I was, you know, still trying to appease and please all these people who were never going to be pleased or pleased with me. So, you know, it's an interesting thing to go through that, but so glad that I finally made the decision because we're fine. My son and I both, we're more than fine. We're doing great.
Well, what a great way to end this conversation. Dana, we're going to have to bring you back in the fall when your book comes out so we can talk
about
we'll
how
this
into
all began, you know, but I have to say kudos to you that you did this yourself. I can't imagine what it is to have lived what you lived through and come out the other end of it the way that you have and so strong and so powerful and courageous enough to put it all down on paper. Yeah. Because people can be cruel and people can be judgmental and everything else, but you know what? And it's a sad thing to say. I think a lot of people are going to see themselves and realize, oh my gosh, there is a way out.
Yeah.
Because very often you feel that there is no way out. You
exactly.
are where you're at, and that's it. And that's not the truth. It is absolutely not the truth at all. So, Dana, how may people reach out to you?
Absolutely. I always tell people go to my website, danasdiaz.com. It's danasdiaz.com. Links for Facebook and Instagram are on there. Link for the book is on there. And if you sign up for the email, you'll get a notification when the next book is released. There's also a quiz to take if you want to see if you are in a relationship with a narcissist. And I also encourage people, I will have this podcast on my website. I think it's really important if you know somebody that might be in a situation that sounds similar to what I've been through, send them the link to this because it's really confrontational and awkward if you approach them about their relationship. But if you send them a link to a podcast and say, hey, this sounded really interesting, you might want to listen, they might hear something that resonates and maybe come to that conclusion themselves. So please share this.
That's a lovely way to get the word out because
yeah.
it's true. Sometimes it's very difficult to broach that subject when you see someone in a relationship that you know is destroying them
yeah.
and you're just there. And can't do anything. So sometimes hearing it from someone else is better. So Dana,
right.
again, thank you very much for sharing just a part of the journey
yeah.
that led to you writing your book. All of Dana's links are going to be live on the website. So thank you so much again for taking the time. It took us long enough to get this done, but I'm glad we got it done. I really
thank
am.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And for all of you tuning in, thanks so much for being with us. We're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters and the Sunday Drivers. So till next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure.
She is sure.
She is strong.
She is strong.
She is she's strong.